Hi, I'm Kathy Forstey, music director at KC Cafe Radio. Today I'm chatting with one of the pioneers of the contemporary mountain dulcimer, Joellen Lapidus. Joellen is an author, builder, songwriter, and player of the dulcimer. She's made instruments for such music legends as Joni Mitchell, Garth Hudson, Jackson Browne, and David Crosby. Joellen's new album, The Dulcimer Music for the Pelican Ballet, blends musical styles of Appalachian, Indian, Arabic, classical, jazz, and pop, all on this unique instrument. Thanks, Joellen Lapidus, for joining us today on KC Cafe Radio.
Hi. Hey. Glad to be
here. It's great to talk to you. Where do you live?
I live in Culver City, which is a little town right outside of Los Angeles, basically Los Angeles County, California.
Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, dulcimer is not your typical instrument that someone picks for someone to play. Who are some of the music dulcimers players who've influenced you over the years?
Well, I first heard the dulcimer when a good friend of mine came back from college in 1961. She came back from college and she had built two dulcimers. That was the first time I ever heard one. And then I decided I would like to build one later. And then in 1965, I was at the Newport Folk Festival, and I heard Richard and Mimi Ferrigna.
Oh, they were wonderful.
play. It was a classic concert. It just was amazing, and it was in the rain. And he played with Bruce Langhorne, who lives right here in Los Angeles, percussionist, and they created a sound that nobody had ever heard before. It just changed my life. And then later on, I discovered Gene Ritchie, who Richard Ferrigna had heard her play and learned from her. And she is one of the Appalachian dulcimer players. She came from Kentucky, and she really introduced the dulcimer in the 60s to the world. She happened to move to New York and traveled all over the country playing her dulcimer. So really, Richard Ferrigna and Gene Ritchie are my two biggest influences.
Those are pretty great ones.
Yeah, you can't lose. And then being a Californian, there weren't many dulcimer players around. In 1967, I ended up living in Big Sur, California, which was a hotbed of hippiedom, and that's where I started building. There was nobody around to learn from, so, you know, I just taught myself and just started on nursery rhymes. I played a lot of instruments by that time and folk songs and whatever, and so most Californians who took up the dulcimer because they heard Richard Ferrigna or Gene Ritchie, we just created our own styles. We didn't have that Appalachian tradition.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the California dulcimer players tend to be so innovative, because we didn't come to the tradition through our families. We came to the tradition through the folk movement of the 60s, at least that generation of dulcimer players. We just opened the field up just tremendously by putting all these other styles. And then I went on to study Indian music at the Ali Akbar College of Indian Music, so you can hear a lot of influence of Indian rhythms on my playing.
So did you grow up in California? Where did you grow up? You mentioned Newport.
I'm a New Yorker. I grew up in Brooklyn and Queens, New York, and, you know, the music scene for kids in school was fabulous. You know, I started accordion in, like, fourth grade or something like that in the school.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had bands, school bands. I played accordion all the way through junior high, and then I had to take the clarinet to be in the orchestra. And, you know, we got free lessons, instruments, orchestras in New York. You know, I went to a seminar given by Leonard Bernstein. We would attend rehearsals with the New York Philharmonic with Leonard Bernstein. So your music exposure when you grow up in New York is so huge. And, of course, you bring that with you to any new instrument you play. And so I think a lot of my compositions have a classical feel, especially, for example, I think it's the third song on my CD, Kevin's Coma. It has a lot of movements, and it ends with it's kind of a little bit of a joke. It ends with a big classical motif,
mm-hmm.
and not everybody would know that. Again, all the West Coast players, and maybe in the middle of the country, too, to some extent, we just took whatever music we were exposed to, including the radio, the TV. You know, we're of those generations, and we put it all on the dulcimer. There's no limit.
Yeah, it's great that music at one point in this country it was more easily accessible to people to learn. Now it's just, you know, it's the radio or the internet mostly now.
Right.
Back when I was in school, you know, band was encouraged and singing and choir was encouraged. And now it's...
Right. It was mandatory.
Yeah. You know, now it's an elective, you know.
If they even have it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a terrible tragedy for kids growing up that they don't get free music lessons through school.
My son, he has to choose between either doing art in school or doing band orchestra. And it's like, why do you have to choose? You should be able to do art and do music.
Right.
But anyway, we digress there. So growing up in New York, how did you get from New York out to the other coast?
Well, you know, in my last year of college, I wanted an adventure before I, you know, got a job and all that. So a friend of mine took off, and I had some friends in Canada. We went through Canada and drove all the way across the country, and I had some friends in California and in San Francisco and visited them, and we just really learned a lot about the country, you know, mm-hmm. drove through Colorado, these little towns, which were, you know, it's weird, you know, a lot of things look like a movie set when you've been, if you grew up in a city like New York, you're exposed to a lot of stuff through the media, mm-hmm. even though the media was so much smaller then. But, like, we were in these little towns in Colorado that were right out of the westerns we had seen, and, you know, but we got a sense of the country that was so wonderful, and people were so friendly and so nice, and there were places where people didn't lock their cars and didn't lock their houses. I mean, we never heard of anything like that. So I decided to go back to California. I lived in Manhattan and had my first real job after college for a year, and I just decided I wanted to come back out to California.
What did you get your degree in?
Well, I started out in pre-med. And then I went to psychology, and then I went to anthropology, which was really interesting. I went to Syracuse University, and anthropology was great. I loved it because you learned about all the different ways people live in the world and have mm-hmm. lived, and how a lot of moral values and a lot of cultural customs are good in one place but don't exist or the opposite in another place. I just thrived on that, but I ended up not wanting to take statistics because I wasn't that great in math. And I ended up majoring in philosophy, of all things, which I feel, in hindsight, really trained my brain. And I think that was a really good thing.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite class was actually constitutional law. We read all the Supreme Court decisions and learned a lot about how you could logically defend opposite positions with the same constitutional principle. But anyway, we digress.
Yeah.
But that was one of the most powerful classes I ever took in my whole life.
Yeah.
It was really taught me how to think mm-hmm. and to think about how people think.
Really opens the mind.
Yeah, it really did.
Well, you're kind of a musical archaeologist yourself. And with all the different styles that you put into your dulcimer and your music, you're digging into different cultures in each one of those songs, too.
Yeah, I never saw the connection between that. But, yeah, I have no problem going from one genre to another. In fact, I love that about my album. You know, sometimes you go to a concert, and the music kind of all sounds a bit the same, but you'll never say that about one of my concerts because just so many different styles. You know, one of the funnest things I did was the song When I Fall in Love, and I always heard a jazz trumpet with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very rarely does a jazz trumpet play with a dulcimer. But when I was making the CD, the place where I made it, they had access to all kinds of musicians, and so I got this wonderful guy, Mitch Manker. And I heard the melody, you know, I heard he was going to play the melody with a muted trumpet. And he had a whole different concept, which I just love it. And that's, I think, one of the most different pieces on the CD, besides the Indian raga that we did totally improvisationally. In an Indian raga, first you present the mode or the notes. It's kind of like the ingredients of a recipe. You present the notes. So we present the melody. And then my bass player, Oliver Steinberg, and my wonderful violin player, Yvette Devereaux, we just sat down in the studio and we did two takes. So everything after you present the melody is all improvisation. And we did two takes, and they were both great, and couldn't even had a hard time deciding which one to use. But that's also, to me, one of the special cuts on the CD.
Well, maybe you can offer it as a bonus track or something on your website or something. That'd be kind of cool to hear.
Oh, that's a great idea. Yeah, just give that one away for free. That's a terrific idea.
One of the songs, since we're talking about this, the CD, it's called Dulcimer Music for the Pelican Ballet. Why did you decide to call it the Pelican Ballet?
Well, I live on the ocean. I live 3 miles from the ocean, and I ride my bike down there all the time, and there's lots of pelicans, and they are amazing to watch, the way they fly. They're so graceful. They have huge wingspans. But I was riding my bike on the bike path right next to the ocean, And I saw this line of like 30 pelicans, and that's very unusual. Usually you'll see three of them or they fly in a V, but this was a line of a huge amount of pelicans, and they were going the same direction as me. I kept looking back at them, and they ended up flying directly over my head, and I could feel their wings beating.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the 30 pelicans, I went, well, that's my next dulcimer. So I ended up building a dulcimer called the Pelican. The peghead is a pelican with its wings outspread landing, and the fretboard is covered with inlays of pelicans in different kinds of flight and diving, and the sound holes are ocean waves made out of abalone shell. But the reason I called it that is that, one, I was really into pelicans at the time, and the pelicans don't speak. They're a soundless bird. The babies speak, but the adults don't talk. And they have no vocalization, like seagulls make a lot of noise. You'll mm-hmm. never hear a pelican. But the way they move, to me, reminded me of a ballet. And it just and I'm into rhythm. I'm into movement in music.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I came up, dulcimer music for the Pelican Ballet. And, you know, a lot of people said, oh, don't do that. Put your picture on the cover and call it something else. It's too abstract. But you know, one thing Joni Mitchell taught me, and she taught me a lot in my short time that I knew her and, you know, made some dulcimers for her. She said, when you do something, put yourself into it. Put as much of yourself into it as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let other people kind of influence you. You know, put your heart and soul and your creative vision into it. So in the end, I put that fabulous, amazing picture of a pelican in full flight on the cover. And that's a photograph by a wonderful photographer, Frank Coxix Jr. It just added to the feeling of flight and movement, mm-hmm. and that's what music is about to me.
So 2 miles from shore, I'm guessing that's a song that's about where you live then.
Yeah, in fact, in my book, I had a great photographer help me with the book. I'm out in the water with a big sign with an arrow, like a direction sign you'd see on the freeway.
Mm-hmm.
And so I submerged myself underwater and held the sign up. And that's but anyway, 2 miles from shore is actually about a lover I had who was always complaining. And so 2 miles from shore is like, hey, you're 2 miles from shore. You're not sinking. You're not drowning. Get over yourself. Swim on in and enjoy the process. That's what 2 miles from shore is about. But yes, the ocean has really affected me in terms of my music. And, you know, people think of L.A., and it is. If you fly into L.A., miles and miles and miles of houses, and the earth is just covered. But we're also surrounded by fabulous mountains,
mm-hmm.
and we have the ocean. Just like when I lived in Big Sur, Big Sur totally affected my playing and my building. You know, I had never lived in the woods, but now I live near the ocean, and that certainly affects me as well.
One of the songs that probably harkens back to your childhood is Grandpa Benny's Chicken Market. I love that song. Tell me about that song.
I call that one of my big hits. Well, I grew up in Brooklyn, and my grandfather had a live poultry chicken market, and we spent a lot of time there, and they had a huge flatbed truck, which didn't have any springs, so it was really great fun to drive out to New Jersey and pick up the chickens, because every time they hit a bump, your head hit the ceiling, and we would just roar with laughter. So anyway, we'd pick up all these cages of chickens and bring them, and you'd come into the market and ask my grandfather for a 3-pound chicken, and he'd look in the cages, he'd pull one out, and they slaughtered it right there. And we just played and played and played in that market, and we had so much fun. And I don't think the chickens had as much fun.
If they knew it was coming, they didn't have any fun.
Oh, hopefully they didn't know it was coming. But,
yeah.
But you know, the whole slaughtering process was right in front of your face. And the butchers, you know, they were very, they were nice to the chickens. They weren't mean or sadistic. It was fast.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quick, and they, you know, very sure-handed, and there's a whole process that, you know, later on in life I was living in New Mexico, and I killed a chicken myself with a hatchet and took the feathers off, and I'll never do that again. What a process. But they had automated, you know, they had machines that beat the feathers off, and boiling water vats that sterilized the chicken and softened up the pores to pull the feathers out, and you know, within 10 minutes, you had your chicken in wax paper and you walked out.
Mm-hmm.
It takes you more than that to go into Vaughn's or Safeway and get a frozen chicken.
Yeah, that's true.
But, yeah, but the song is absolutely true, and all the people mentioned in it are my family members. And I was so happy to be able to write a song about that market. And my grandparents, they were fabulous.
It's a great song. It's one of those songs that it's a real great family story song, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and yeah. It's in the same tradition as a folk, those old folk songs,
mm-hmm.
where you're writing about your family, you know. And I really love that about the song.
So was your family musical too, or?
No. I had a grandmother. This is interesting. I had three sets of grandparents because of a divorce. And all the men were named Benjamin, and two of them were named Yetta. So it's a little confusing because it's not on the CD, but there is a song called Oh Grandma Yetta. My intention is to write a song about all of my grandparents, every one of them, and my parents and my cousins, and write a CD, you know, do a whole CD called Family. I'm not there yet, but I really cherish writing songs about one's family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most rock and roll today is love songs and unrequited love, jealous love. But I love the family stuff because family's so interesting.
Yeah, and those are love songs, you know, love for your family.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
You took like a 40-year hiatus from building Dulcimers. Why did you stop, and why did you decide to start building again?
Well, I stopped building in 78 when my book came out. I was at a turning point. I wasn't able to earn a living doing music, and I had a music store, and I was building instruments, and I couldn't get them done very quickly, and I had some emotional problems, so I decided to really straighten myself out and take care of myself. So I thought the book is either going to signify the end of this chapter of my career or the beginning of a new one, and it signified the end. And so I just did a lot of work on myself, and I ended up starting a carpentry business, and I did custom cabinet work and finished carpentry for those years, and kind of put my life back together. And I kept my shop. I knew that someday I'd build again, and, you know, I was also coming off the 60s, which is a period of a lot of drugs and stuff like that, and I wanted to change my whole lifestyle. And in 84... I went back to school. I became a psychotherapist. In 98, I went back to school and got my doctorate in psychoanalysis, actually. And then in 2002, music started coming back into my life. And mm-hmm. then I got into Jewish music, klezmer music, and I formed a band called Extreme Klezmer Makeover.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody wants to hear that music, it's all on my website, lapidusmusic.com. Actually, that band existed until just a couple of years ago. And we had a great time. I played accordion and clarinet and dulcimer in the klezmer band. You know? And we just, I guess I am a little bit of a musical anthropologist because I really researched a lot of klezmer, and we did a lot of old stuff and we wrote new music. But I also, in about 96, I started playing the dulcimer again, and I had various groups, which has led up to my current trio. We're called the Bayona Gypsy Band. In about 2010, you know, it just the energy built up, and I got back into my shop, and I started building. And the first mm-hmm. dulcimer I built was the Pelican Dulcimer, which kind of blew me away because I didn't know if I'd still have the skills, but it's probably mm-hmm. the most magnificent dulcimer I've built. And then I work full-time as a psychotherapist, and then I built another instrument called the Buddha, which I sold to a friend of mine, Shan Creighton. It's a half Buddha face. Then I've done inlay for other makers over the years. And then 2 years ago, I started building these two instruments called the jellyfish dulcimers. Again, the ocean. I'm building one of my mm-hmm. students. I've been teaching this whole time. Starting about 2000. Yeah, I guess I started teaching again in the 2000s. And I do a dulcimer workshop now. But anyway, so these two jellyfish dulcimers, they're almost done. I'm actually starting to put the finish on today. One of them is sold, but the other one will be for sale, and there'll be pictures on my website and my Facebook page. So I have cut back in my psychotherapy practice because I want to build more. I really love that part of the art. You know, I love building instruments, but I only do one of a kind. I'm not trying to be a manufacturer. I still want to work in my psychotherapy practice, one, because I love that work. It really you know, as a songwriter, getting so much information about people, you know, learning so much about people as a psychotherapist, I think, you know, some of the songs I've written have some of that influence. But I really have a nice balance right now between performing, building, teaching, and being a psychotherapist. It's just a really nice balance.
Do you do custom instruments? I know I mentioned in the intro that you did an instrument for Joni Mitchell and Jackson Browne and David Crosby.
That was a long time ago. That was during the 60s and 70s, during the, you know, just that great period of time.
What does a dulcimer look like that you built for Joni Mitchell?
Well, I built three. You can see them all on my website. The first one was the Wild Columbine, and that is a kind of a stretched-out violin shape. And I went into the woods in Big Sur and saw these beautiful red columbine flowers, and so those are the sound holes, and I carved the peg head like a hawk because we had all kinds of hawks flying overhead in Big Sur. And then the second one was the Wild Columbine, a friend of hers stepped on it, and it was broken, and she was going on tour, so I happened to have this dulcimer. It's called the Princess, and the peghead still has the hawk theme, and the sound holes are these very complicated interwoven rhythm sound holes. They were actually designed by a fabulous dulcimer player and singer, Laura Allen, who is now deceased. She, Robbie Long, and I were this little Three Musketeer group in the late 60s and 70s in Marin County. We really influenced each other creatively. Laura was a great talent. I'm so sad she's no longer with us. And Robbie built dulcimers, and he's now writing albums with fabulous, hilariously funny dog songs on them, robbielong.com. And then the third one I built for her, we designed together. It's called The Jester, and it's actually on the cover of the first edition of my book. The peghead was actually a self-portrait of all the different musical influences. There's Baroque, there's African, there's Renaissance, there's my Jewish heritage. It's all in that peghead, and the lips of the face on the peghead are actually three-dimensional. There's a piece of ivory and a piece of ebony, and the cover of the book is me kissing the dulcimer with this rainbow thing around my neck. It's really cool. But anyway, the instrument was made of padauk and rosewood. Like a jester has alternating colors and two sides. The dulcimer, one side is rosewood, one side is a padauk, and it's a very beautiful instrument. I don't think it ever got played that much because Joni stopped playing the dulcimer at that point. There's a bunch of YouTube videos of Joni from that tour, and she's playing the Princess Dulcimer. Those are pretty accessible on YouTube. You know, I have my 15 minutes, my 15 seconds of fame. She actually talks about me. And actually, that scene is in, they made a documentary film. Patricia Delek and Wayne Jang made a fabulous documentary film called Hearts of the Dulcimer. They actually licensed that 20 seconds from that video. So actually, you can see that in their film, which traced the history of the dulcimer in the United States and especially in the West Coast dulcimer movement.
So who taught you how to build dulcimers?
Well, my father did woodwork when I was little, and I watched him in the garage. And then my mother took me to these Saturday classes that they have for kids, and she put me in this little ballet class. And I was in this black leotard and tights, and I just looked at everybody, and I said, this is not for me. So I went down the hall, and I found a woodworking class. And then when my friend came back from college having made two dulcimers, I thought, oh, I'm going to do this. So I had some skills. Then when I moved to Big Sur, I started buying one tool a week, and we're talking 1967, and from 67 to 69. And in those days, women didn't do woodwork much. So if I'd go into a lumber yard or a hardware store asking smart questions, they would teach me. I mean, so almost every man I ran into who I asked questions taught me. So I bought a tool a week, collected all these tools. I also had a chemistry teacher who made guitars, and he sat with me, and we designed a dulcimer. You know, I didn't have any clamps, and I didn't have any way to heat the wood to bend it, so I actually just made a coffin-shaped dulcimer, and my clamps were my knees. You know, I would just hold the thing until the thing dried enough for me to put it down. And actually, the famous psychologist Virginia Satir bought my first dulcimer for $25. And then people saw it, and they thought, hey, this is cool. Make me one. And so I started getting orders, and I started building dulcimers. And then they got more complicated. And a funny fact, if we have time, is that the first dulcimer I built for Joni, the Wild Columbine, I had no way still to bend wood. Now, it's a violin shape, stretched out violin shape, because, you know, violin is maybe 20 inches. This was like, you know, 30 inches, 36 inches. So I cut it out of a 2-inch thick piece of walnut. And this this carpenter in Carmel Valley let me, again, people were so interested in what I was doing. They helped me out like crazy. So he let me use his jigsaw. And if those of you who know what a jigsaw is, I'm cutting through 2-inch wood. First, I have to cut the outside shape, and then I have to cut the inside shape, all these curves. By the end of it, my hand was absolutely numb. I built I built 3 dulcimers in that shape. But the wild columbine dulcimer was just stunning. It was like, and it was actually kind of very revolutionary, because nobody had done like a full flower inlaid into the top of the instrument, the soundboard. Mm-hmm. You know, people had mostly put hearts. People had some round designs, Celtic designs. I think Capritaurus did that. But this was all the contours of a flower. If you don't know what a wild columbine, think of the outside of rose petals a little bit, and then an intricate center just inlaid totally into the top, and the carving. I mean, it was pretty spectacular. The way I ran into Joni was, I knew she was coming to this the Big Sur Folk Festival, and I was living at Esalen at the time where the festival was happening. So I told my friends, I'm going to make this dulcimer for Joni Mitchell or the Incredible String Band, and they all laughed at me. But I saw her walking down the path, and I just put it right in front of her, and she came over, and mm-hmm. I played it for her, and she bought it, and then came the Blue Album, you know.
Wow, that's cool.
Kind of nice to be part of that history of that period of time.
Yeah, it's just sort of a divine thing that you did.
Yes, yeah, and she was definitely a mentor. I learned so much from her about how much work it is to be a professional musician. You know, mm-hmm. I think I came from the thinking, oh, these guys who are famous, you know, they just play music, they're naturally talented. But she dispelled those theories. She showed me how much, there's a lot of work. And if you put mm-hmm. in the work, you get results. But mm-hmm. if you don't put in the work, you know, you sit on your couch and nobody hears your music. And
yeah.
I have tremendous respect for Crosby, Stills, and Nash, the mm-hmm. Incredible String Band, Joni, all those guys.
So when you build an instrument, how long does it take you to build?
Well, I got interrupted this year because I broke my elbow in a bicycle accident. So there was a whole period of time, but usually it takes me about a year.
To make one instrument?
Yeah, but, you know, wow. I'm not working on it full time because I work full time, you know, mm-hmm. to support myself. So I don't have financial pressure on my instrument building. I have total freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if someone wants me to build an instrument for them, I usually talk to them and we design it together.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I don't just do, you know, original works. Like the jellyfish dulcimer, a student of mine wanted a dulcimer, and we sat and we talked, and she loves the ocean, and we came up with the jellyfish. Again, because of movement, mm-hmm. musical. The jellyfish is so sensual, and the way it moves and pulsates and its rhythms, and they're beautiful. If you Google jellyfish images, your mind will be blown. And luckily, we have an aquarium, the Pacific Aquarium, here in Long Beach. And they happened when we designed this dulcimer. And the next month, they literally had a jellyfish exhibit from jellyfish from all over the world. So I went down there, and I always study the animal or the flower that I'm working with. I learn a lot about it. I guess that's my anthropology coming back. I really enjoy that, really learning about the animal and learning about the planet. And then we came up with the various designs for the jellyfish. And you can actually see the peghead on Facebook and my website, and I'll be putting some pictures up of the finished instrument very soon.
You mentioned there's 2 new dulcimers you're working on.
Yeah, but I did something for the first time. I built 2 of the same instrument, and I did that for 2 reasons. One, I knew one was sold already,
mm-hmm.
and I thought it would be more efficient, you know, because it takes me so long to build 2 at once, and then I'll have 1 for sale. That was an interesting process. I really enjoyed building 2 at a time.
Mm-hmm.
But it took me, July will be 2 years that I got this order. So I'm not proud of that. I really would like to build my instruments in a shorter period of time, but this was a brand new shape, and when you do a brand new shape, you have to work out a lot of design details.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, my broken elbow didn't help. But I would say if the creek don't rise and we don't have a big earthquake in L.A., that if someone ordered a dulcimer from me, they would get it within a year. And I'm open to it. I'm building and.
So how would people contact you if they wanted you to make them a dulcimer?
Well, they can either contact me through my website or through Facebook.
Okay, and that's lapidusmusic.com.
Yeah, and actually on my website I have my office phone number, which I don't mind giving out, which is 310-474-1123. Anybody can call me on that number, and it's going to say, this is Dr. Joellen Lapidus, you know, psychotherapy, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I get a lot of music stuff through that, too, so it's fine. One thing I'm really proud of is we have a little dulcimer club here in Los Angeles, and we've been performing. In fact, we're performing next weekend at the Topanga Banjo Fiddling Contest, and there's nine of us. Here's our repertoire. Okay, so we're doing some traditional folk songs, Leatherwing Bat, and Cluckle Hen, and Spotted Pony, and then we're doing a piece by Bach, the Minuet, which was arranged by a wonderful dulcimer maker in California, Janita Baker, who is a fabulous player and builder. She has Blue Lion Instruments. She arranged this for four voices, and then we're doing Sweet Baby James by James Taylor. I hope I just didn't screw anything up by announcing.
probably got people interested in coming. That sounds a really great show.
Topanga, it's in Los Angeles at the Calamingos Ranch in Malibu. So that's really been fun.
Will someone be singing as well?
Yeah, we all sing. In fact, we're going to give out song sheets so people can sing along. And you know, the dulcimer has always been a community instrument. It's the tradition has been family singing when people didn't have TVs and radios, and It comes from that, you know, they were in the hollers in these deep valleys in the Appalachian Mountains, and families sang together. And so I always like to get the audience singing. Like on Grandpa Benny, I get people singing along in Brooklyn, you know. It's really
cool. Yeah.
So we like to get people singing along.
Well, what's the difference between a mountain dulcimer and a hammer dulcimer?
Oh, that's easy. The only thing they have in common is the word dulcimer. A hammer dulcimer is the predecessor of the piano. Now, when you strike a key on the piano, there's a series of mechanical devices that result in a hammer that hits the string. A hammer dulcimer is smaller. You can carry it around. It could be like 2 feet by 3 feet by 18 inches. It's big, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like a very large chessboard, and only it's trapezoid in shape. And you have hammers in your hands that you play. So you're playing melody, rhythm. It's a magnificent instrument. It's so beautiful. Oh, but it has nothing to do with the mountain dulcimer, whose predecessors really come from Europe, the Hummel, the Scheitholt instruments from Germany and Sweden, stuff like that. And the Hummel, I forgot to mention the Hummel. It never existed before the United States, like the banjo. It's a truly American folk instrument. It has nothing to do with the hammer dulcimer.
Why do they think they called it the dulcimer then? Is that the only thing they can relate it to, or why did they call it that?
You know, I don't know the answer to that question. I probably haven't read enough of my history books, but I think the word dulcimer, myrrh is ocean, dulce is sweet. So I think it just happened to be called the dulcimer because it has a sweet sound, and it just so happens the hammer dulcimer is called the dulcimer. And now, since they both have the word dulcimer, all these festivals have both hammer and mountain dulcimers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of ironical because the instruments have nothing to do with each other except they're both stringed instruments.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have started playing the mountain dulcimer with hammers, one hammer. You have to use the other hand to fret. Mm-hmm. But I think that's just a little fad. I don't think there are people who play the mountain dulcimer with a bow. There's a whole strain of people who played bow dulcimers, and I'm trying to think of the guy's name. Kenny Bloom. He lives in Mount Airy, North Carolina, and he used to live in L.A. In fact, he and I hitchhiked from San Francisco to L.A. one time in about 14 hours, We got stuck in Oxnard. Nobody would pick up with a guitar and a dulcimer. But he now lives in North Carolina and builds these fabulous, beautiful bowed dulcimers. He builds them in a style of what's called a viola da gamba, which is an old Renaissance instrument. And the fretboard is slightly curved, like all the violin family instruments, so you can bow across, you know. So the dulcimer, you know, it's just expanding and evolving like crazy. People are making electric dulcimers, solid body dulcimers, banjo dulcimers, dulcimers that you can play with a slide, like a slide guitar. You know, it's just a fun folk movement that is happening as we speak.
Yeah, I know, living here in Missouri, you know, you go down to Branson and they have a mountain dulcimer shop where you can actually get your mountain dulcimer made for you there. And, you know, it's not nearly as nice as the ones you make, but, you know, it's kind of cool because it's sort of expanding the instrument to people who wouldn't normally even know what a dulcimer was, you know. So it's kind of cool that they do that there.
Do you happen to know the dulcimer maker?
It's there at Silver Dollar City, so I'm not really sure.
I'll look it up, yeah. But you know, what's I have a little bit of guilt about making really elegant dulcimers. Let me tell you why. The dulcimer and Gene Ritchie, they come from a tradition of valuing simplicity. And those early dulcimers were absolutely stunningly simple and sweet, and they had a heart on them, music from the heart. And that's very precious to me. That's not my tradition. And my background, you know, I spent so much time in the museums in New York looking at great art from, you know, the centuries and folk art. So I bring all that to my instrument building. And what comes out is these more elegant, decorated instruments, you know, and they're but I consider myself a folk artist because every instrument has either animals or flowers or birds. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything is kind of from nature and my life experience. So it's still folk art, but, you know, it just comes from a different tradition. I have more money. I put the top quality gold shaller pegs on my instruments. It's coming from a slightly different sensibility, but the music that we play on these instruments is all the same. And kind of lovely.
What kind of wood do you like to use for the dulcimer? Is it different woods?
Yes, definitely.
What do you like to use?
Well, my favorite wood to use is a wood called padauk. It's also called vermilion, and it's a wonderful orange color naturally. When you put the finish on it, and when it ages, it turns a little rust orange. You know, it loses some of the neon orange kind of color. But it's very musical. It works a little bit like mahogany, and it's very musical like mahogany, but the color is spectacular, and it's actually very much like mahogany in texture and density and everything, but it's very musical. When you tap it, you get a beautiful musical note. And I love working in East Indian and Brazilian rosewood. I have Brazilian rosewood that I bought in the 1960s and early 1970s. You know, now you're not allowed to buy it. You're not even allowed to really make instruments with it anymore. But if you had the wood, you know, before, like 1970, you know, or 1973, I think is the cutoff date. In fact, the two jellyfish dulcimers they're East Indian rosewood. Mm-hmm. And that has a beautiful tone and works really well. I love both of those woods. For the top, I always use spruce. Mm-hmm. People are now using cedar and even California redwood. Mm-hmm. But I would never use California redwood. It's so soft, and I just wouldn't want to be able to dent it that easily. It's so soft, and it's kind of brittle, too. Mm-hmm. But in fact, I have a base dulcimer made by McSpadden Dulcimers in Mountain View, Arkansas, that has a redwood top. I love it. The body is cherry wood, which is a more an eastern wood, and the top is redwood, which is a California wood, so that makes me happy. It makes me smile, you know, to have both coasts represented in this one instrument.
Yeah.
But I use spruce tops, either German spruce or Adirondack spruce that you buy in this country. Sitka spruce also. Some of it comes from Alaska. Some of it comes from Oregon. Some of it comes from the East Coast.
So what's the fingerboard made from?
Oh, the fingerboard, I prefer ebony because the inlays that I do show up the best on ebony. Mm-hmm. But they're not solid ebony. It's maybe a 3/16 or a quarter inch of ebony put on. I use Honduras mahogany. I don't use Philippine mahogany. Honduras mahogany is the wood that's used for most guitar necks. Mm-hmm. Very musical, works very well. The fretboards are hollowed out. That's one part of my design feature. And I think all the sound is really made in that fretboard, and then it bounces around in the body and the back and sides, which are the rosewood or the padauk, give it the color. You know, but dulcimers are very forgiving. You don't have to be as technically proficient and competent as like making a guitar or violin. So it lends itself a lot to do-it-yourselfers. And you can even make a cardboard dulcimer. There's a company called Backyard Music. Mm-hmm. I do workshops where in 2 hours, 3 hours, take 26 people, and they make cardboard dulcimers. They have a fully functioning, good-sounding musical instrument.
That's very cool.
they come in a kit, and I can make it in an hour, but if you do it in a group, it takes about 3 hours. But those are really cool. So the dulcimer is easy to learn, easy to build. It's just a lovely instrument, and you can play all styles of music on it. So
yeah, you're proof of that. This album is proof of that. You can play any style of music on it. I want to ask you about the album here for a second. It's called Dulcimer Music for the Pelican Ballet. Why did it take you so long to finally do a CD?
Well, it takes a lot of money to produce a studio CD. And again, I stopped playing music. Remember, all that time, I stopped. And I just started performing again and got the musicians that I really wanted, you know, really good musicians to play with. So how long did it take? Well it came out in 2014. I don't know. I think it took about a year to make it. But what was nice about it is it's a compilation of, it's like the best of Joelle and Lapidus. You know, it's got the Appalachian medley has, you know, three great Appalachian tunes, and it ends with a fabulous Richard, my version of a Richard Farina tune. I wanted the artwork to be as spectacular as my instruments. And,
You wanted to do it right.
I wanted to do it right. I wanted it to be as elegant as my instruments. I had a fabulous recording engineer, a guy named Dewey. You know, it takes a while to put together all the elements. My friend Laura, you know, she got a big record contract and the whole deal fell apart. It's really sad because the world is now deprived of, not only because she's not alive anymore, but, you know, a lot of people start albums and they don't finish. It's a very harrowing, it's like Joni said, it's a lot of work. Not everybody finishes. And I'm very proud of both the book, which I republished in, I think, 2010 it came out again. I did a second edition. I was able to get the four Joni Mitchell songs from the Blue album in the book. I wasn't able to get them in 1978. Warner Brothers wouldn't give me permission. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Joni isn't as big a star now as she was then, so I was able to license those four songs in the book. That makes the book, I think, even better than the
first. And they
can
find that on your website, right? The instruction
They can
book.
Buy everything on my website. The Klezmer Music, Dulcimer Music for the Pelican Ballet, my first album, which is a live concert, the book.
I was going to ask you, when you write, do you write on the dulcimer or you write on another instrument and then transfer that to the dulcimer?
Oh, that's a really good question. A little of the both. I have a little Casio electric piano in my my room here where I do all my computer work and composing and stuff. And sometimes I'll hear a melody and I'll tap it out on the piano and then I'll put it on the dulcimer. And usually, though, most commonly, I'm just messing around on the dulcimer. And I'll come up with a new tuning. Oh, that's the other thing that I did was, like, these days, almost everybody's limiting themselves to one tuning, D-A-D, with some extra frets, so they can play in both major and minor keys. We didn't mention, the dulcimer doesn't have all the frets, like a guitar. Mm-hmm. So, and you're always in an open tuning, which means when you strike all the strings, it's harmonious. So you have to retune if you're going to play in a minor. One of the things the West Coast people did was we explored all kinds of alternate tunings. And I play guitar, too, and I play accordion. You know, so if I'm messing around on any instrument and I come up with a melody or an idea, since mostly I'm performing right now on dulcimer and accordion, I'll transfer it. You know, I'll see how it sounds on the dulcimer. The accordion stuff that I do is more on the Klezmer CDs, but I wrote a lot of original material, Always Russian, O Grandma Yetta, Winter's End, a lot of that stuff. Again, it's very orchestral, having to do with my classical background. But the stuff I do on the dulcimer, You know, sometimes I need to find some chords or something. I'll figure it out on the piano, and then I'll go back to the dulcimer. So I work them all, you know, whatever. I also have a little melodica, which is really fun, because, you know, that's kind of, it's like a giant harmonica with a piano keyboard, and you blow in. And that's fun to kind of play around on, too. You come up with melodies.
So you play a lot of instruments.
Yeah. I also play Arabic drum. In fact, I studied it. I played tablas when I was at the Ali Akbar College of Indian Music. I think that really affected my rhythm, because what I'm known for is my rhythm. Mm-hmm. My rhythm. I do a lot. I improvise on rhythm, which is what the Indians do in their music. Mm-hmm. And you don't find a lot of people who do that, even in the dulcimer world. But to me, if you listen to Indian music, the drummer is an equal soloist to the string player or the singer. And they will improvise and rhythms, and they will make all kinds of sounds on the drums. And I try to do that on the dulcimer, too. There's all kinds of rhythmic possibilities on the dulcimer. It's just fabulous. And I think that's really defines my style, you know, the creation of groove, different kind of rhythm grooves.
Which kind of leads into jazz as well.
Yeah, exactly. Jazz has definitely influenced me.
So I wanted to talk about your other life as a doctor. You play in an oncology unit, too, in a hospital.
Yeah, I've only done that a few times, but I hope to do that like once a month. But I met somebody who ran this oncology unit in Beverly Hills, and she said, well, why don't you come and just play? Sometimes, you know, some of the patients come. So, you know, I've done it a few times now, and I sit in a chair, and people are having their infusions of chemotherapy, and no microphone, nothing. I don't sing. I just play for an hour.
It's going to be very meditative kind of thing for people.
And I do what I love best. I just sit there for an hour, and I improvise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll start with a song. Like I might start with, I've been working on the railroad. And I'll just start playing all kinds of melodies. And, you know, that's what the dulcimer is really fun for. You can just sit and improvise. You don't have to play a song. You don't have to play anything perfectly. You can, in fact, if you have a bad memory like me, you need to improvise, because you'll never, I hardly ever remember the exact notes or the words.
Mm-hmm.
I go and play, and I had cancer myself, so I have a lot of sympathy for people going through what they go through, and it's a very joyous experience. There's a whole world of music in the hospitals now. You can even get a certification for, I forget the exact title of it, but for people, it brings down people's blood pressure, it helps people with chronic pain. It helps people sit through the 4 hours of an infusion.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just soothing. It's just healing to people on hospice. I mean, music, you know, has such power.
Music definitely has healing power and cathartic power as well.
And joy. It goes through the whole spectrum, from absolute joy and ecstasy to healing. And that's pretty cool.
So other than playing in the hospital, you're playing your dulcimer music, and you're still playing with the klezmer? Extreme Klezmer?
No. Extreme Klezmer Maker over, we ended, I think, 2013. It was the last time we performed.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a call yesterday for the band. There's musicians that I still play with that I can put a band together 20 minutes if I can reach people on the phone. Dan Radlau, the accordion player, is still around. There's another accordion player, G. Rob, who I use. We had a lot of substitutes because the violin players are around, you know. So occasionally I'll put together a band and we'll play klezmer.
Mm-hmm.
But the band Extreme Klezmer Makeover itself doesn't exist anymore. I have a new band, my trio, which is Joellen Lapidus and the Bayona Gypsy Band.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Yvette Devereaux, violin, extraordinary violin player. Oliver Steinberg, great upright bass player. And so we have a very acoustic sound, and I play dulcimer and accordion.
So are you guys got any shows you want to promote?
We're setting up a house concert for L.A. The place we were all set up for fell through, so I'm in the process of finding another venue. I should have that within the next couple of weeks, and it'll be on my website. And the dulcimer orchestra or ensemble, the Dulcimer Club, we're performing at Topanga on Sunday the 15th. But I will be at Kentucky Music Week teaching and playing and performing, and that's in Bardstown, Kentucky. That's June 26th to July 1st. And then I'll be in Townsend, Tennessee at the Wooden Strings Dulcimer Shop. They have a monthly concert series called the Back Porch Pickin' Series. I'll be there July 16th. And then I'm flying over to Arkansas to the Ozark Mountain Jubilee. I'll be teaching and performing there in Mountain View, which is the home of McFadden Dulcimers, fabulous dulcimers, from July 21st to the 23rd. That's a three-day festival. It's a wonderful festival. It's all mountain dulcimers, great teachers, great setting.
Mm-hmm.
And also October 1st, we have the Southern California Dulcimer Heritage Festival, and that's here in Southern California. I teach there, and I'm the MC for the evening concert, and there's a lot of good stuff happening.
Is all this information on your website?
Yeah, everything's on my website, lapidusmusic.com.
And people can find your music in your instruction book and your dulcimers if they want to order a dulcimer or just look at your dulcimers.
Yeah, everything. Yeah. In fact, I have one other dulcimer for sale. It used to be mine. It's called the Crying Seahorse Dulcimer. That one is for sale, and that's completely finished and done. There's pictures of it on the website. And yeah, everything's on the website, lapidusmusic.com. Go there and you'll learn more about me than you ever wanted to know. But you'll hear a lot of great music and hear a lot of great musicians.
For sure. Yeah, wonderful. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us here on KC Cafe Radio. It's been a great pleasure getting to hear your stories and get to know more about you and your music and your history. It's amazing what you've done in your life.
Well, thank you. It's really been a pleasure at this end, too.
Thank you very much. Can people find you on Facebook as well?
Yeah, Facebook, Joellen Lapidus Music. Yeah.
Okay.
Or my name, just my name. I have two pages. I have just Joellen Lapidus and Joellen Lapidus Music. But everything that's on both pages is the same. So it doesn't matter.
All right,
you
great.
You can find me.
No, they can find you there. All right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you again, Joellen. It was wonderful talking to you.
Okay. Bye-bye.